Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from the Rocky Mountain town of Crested Butte, Colorado. I am your host, Mark Troutman, CFP. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. As I mentioned on the last episode, these next few episodes are going to be hopefully a little shorter, easier to digest during the summer months, but also because I have a lot going on right now. And as I said, I would keep you up to date on the house sale and everything. As of last podcast issuance, I had just listed my house for sale. It went on the market on a Friday, and by Saturday, I had a offer, which I accepted and went under contract. So things moved very fast. I also went to Longmont. My goal is to relocate to Longmont as my home base, but also keep a place here in Crested Butte. And I toured some houses. There were some interesting options. I do have an option to rent as well, which is what I think I'm initially leaning towards, unless something comes down that's very interesting. In fact, just yesterday, I'm recording this on a Monday, so on Sunday, a potential lead came through that looks very promising, and so I'm hoping to follow through on that. We'll see where that goes. I'll keep you informed. It's a home in Longmont in the center of the financial independence social network, I guess you would say. So I'm looking forward to being able to look at that a little closer, and maybe that'll come to fruition. We will see. I have also a line on a what's called an accessory dwelling unit. So it's an apartment, a one-bedroom apartment here in Crested Butte. I am hoping that will also come through, so I would have kind of a place to come back to here in Crested Butte. That's the goal. And I'm hoping the one that I have seen and talked to the landlord will work out. Just waiting for some final details to be determined. And I'll keep you abreast of that. I've been doing a lot of packing. I am purging a lot of stuff. I'm trying to get down to fewer items, I guess you would say. I don't want to say minimalism, but definitely purging. So that's what I'm working on. It's taking up a lot of time, as you can imagine, going through all of your things and deciding what to keep and what to donate. And I am finding good homes for a lot of things, so that makes me very happy. So anyway, that's the update. Like I said, I will keep you posted. So again, we still have my background. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm still in the same house. I have a projected closing date at the end of September. So it's coming up. And I have a trip coming up. So my daughter and my mother and Becky from the Catching Up to Fi podcast, the previous co-host of Catching Up to Fi, and her husband, Steven, and another couple from the Rock Retirement Club are going on a cruise together. So funny thing, so today's Monday, as I mentioned, I logged into my Charles Schwab, or let's say I attempted to log into my Charles Schwab account this morning, in anticipation of being able to move some money into my Schwab checking account, because when I travel internationally, I can use the ATM card associated with that Charles Schwab checking account to get money out in local currency at ATMs around the world without a foreign currency fee or a foreign exchange fee. So I was attempting to just put some more money in that checking account. I tried to log in and it was like, was not letting me log in. I wasn't concerned about theft or anything like that, but I said, wonder if something's going on in the market today. And maybe that's what, maybe the system is overloaded. Let me open my app and see what's going on. Whoa, look at that. The market is down 1,000 points. So I'm guessing a lot of people were trying to log into their accounts this morning. I was able to log in later in the day and do the transaction that I wanted to do, but it gives me a good opening to talk about things like market declines. They happen. And yeah, one of the things I like to joke with people is The book, The Simple Path to Wealth, is a book I frequently recommend. And there's a number of chapters in there. If you have not read the book, I highly recommend reading it. I'll put it in the show notes. But he has a couple of chapters in there talking about how to understand that markets are volatile. It's entirely normal. And you need to accept that as part of the risk, I guess you would say, or volatility risk, really, of investing in the stock market. Comes with the territory. So I highly recommend people read those three chapters. I don't recall exactly which ones they are off the top of my head, but if you get the book, you can see them. And it talks about basically how to understand market volatility and that the market will go down many times probably during your holding period. But one of the things that J.L. Collins put out, and I think it's so funny, it's a YouTube video, and I'll also link to this in the show notes. And it's called A Guided Meditation for When the Stock Market is Dropping. So I'll put the link in the show notes. It's like a Zen video to help you calm down. And if you know J.L. Collins and you've read the book, it's kind of funny. It's a very kind of serious 10-minute meditation guide, I guess you would say. It's basically stay the course, these are normal, and so forth. But it's fun to watch. And if you ever get kind of freaked out with the market going down, like I said, it does do this on occasion. It's not something that's abnormal. And in fact, I've talked to a couple of people and they're like, wow, you see what the market's doing? I'm like, yeah, we're basically back to May. It's not a big deal. And maybe it'll go lower. Who knows? Maybe it'll wipe out the entire year's gains. Who knows? But the point is that markets are volatile. It's all part of the standard method of the market's gyrations, I guess you would say. And it's really probably nothing to be concerned about. These happen on occasion and it's just par for the territory. So anyway, it just came to mind today and I thought, oh, that would be fun to put that in the show notes and you can watch it at your leisure. Now, what I've also saw was an article that I wanted to talk a little bit about. This came out, it's in the Wall Street Journal. I'll try to link to it. Hopefully it won't be behind a paywall. And it was published on July 22nd, and it was written by Ann Turgeson. The title of the article is The 401k Rollover Mistake That Costs Retirement Savers Billions. So of course I was like, huh, wonder what that mistake is. And the subtitle is Much of the Money Moved into IRAs Misses Out on Market Returns. And I thought this was very interesting because when you leave a job and you have a 401k with an employer, you have a couple of options. You could just leave it there. Some employers, if you don't have a large balance, force you to either cash it out or roll it out to an IRA. And you can do that to any place, really. The most common that people in the, certainly in the financial independence community, would roll it over to either Vanguard or Charles Schwab or Fidelity or something of that nature. And what I think is interesting is what people don't understand about how this rollover works. Typically what happens, and I'm going to go back a few years when I started with my 401k. When I opened my 401k, I had to elect what investment to put those dollars into, whether it's an index fund, a stock fund, bond fund, what have you. I had to make an active election as to where that money will go when it's withdrawn from my paycheck and put into my 401k. Well, today, because a lot of people weren't necessarily doing that, and the default option was a money market account, which isn't really great for long-term investing because it basically is like cash. There was a rule, and I don't remember what year it was, that allowed 401k plans to opt participants into a target retirement fund, for example, which is usually based on your year of retirement. So let's say you're going to retire in 65, 40 years from now, and it's probably going to be highly allocated to stocks with a long-term like that and very few bonds. And then as it gets closer and closer to that 2065 time period, it's going to move more into bonds and less into stocks. But it's the default mechanism for most 401ks these days. And the other thing is many people are automatically signed up for their 401k. It used to be that you had to elect to participate, but many people weren't doing that. So they allowed companies to automatically enroll employees in the 401k plan. Now people are being automatically enrolled. They are investing automatically or defaulted into the target retirement fund. So basically, they don't have to do anything. And it's kind of like on autopilot. The problem is that when you leave an employer and if you roll it over into an IRA, I think a lot of people assume that, well, it'll just still be in that investment. But that's not how it works. What happens is typically the 401k plan is going to cash you out and generate a check. Typically, it may be mailed to you, and hopefully you deposit it into your custodial account, and therefore it's considered a 60-day rollover, and you won't have any taxes withheld or deducted, and you won't owe any taxes on it. But typically what will happen is they may send that check directly to the new custodian. Now, the new custodian likely has opened an account at your request. They receive this check, it goes into your account, and it goes into what's called the settlement fund, which is usually a money market fund of some type. But it's up to you to tell them, oh, now that the money is here, this is what I want you to do with it, whether it's buy your index fund, bond fund, stock fund, what have you. But you need to tell them to do that. So this article, I'm going to read just the first few paragraphs. And it was very interesting. It says, workers miss out on billions in investment gains by pulling retirement savings out of the stock market after switching jobs, often without meaning to. When people roll 401k balances from their old company's plan into an individual retirement account, the money is frequently held as cash until they select new investments. Many never do, according to new research from Vanguard Group. Nearly a third who rolled savings into IRAs at Vanguard in 2015 still had the balance sitting in cash 7 years later. So I'm going to now go over to that research from Vanguard and look at it directly, because I always like to go to the source. So that's what the article said. But if we look at the report itself that Vanguard wrote, and it's called Improving Retirement Outcomes by Default, the Case Study for an IRA QDIA. So what I believe they are referring to is having people automatically defaulted into an investment option such as a target date fund when the money comes over as a result of a rollover. And that's what the paper is discussing. That should be what is done. And it says later in their article, basically what QDIA is qualified default investment alternative. So what they are talking about is making a case for IRAs to be automatically defaulted into something like the target date fund. That is what money is typically defaulted into in the 401k. So this doesn't happen anymore. And their research showed the key takeaways, and these are a few bullet points, so I'll read these, kind of like the executive summary, I guess you would say. Key takeaway number one, cash is the de facto default for individual retirement account contributions, despite being generally prohibited as a default investment option in 401k plans. Unless individuals voluntarily invest IRA assets, they tend to stay in cash indefinitely. And this next bullet point was, to me, just shocking. IRA cash is highly sticky. Among rollovers conducted in 2015, so that's what, 9 years ago, 28% remained in cash for at least 7 years. And it has a chart that shows the breakdown of how long people were basically in cash in these rollovers. And says the chart below breaks this trend down by age group, younger investors, women, and those with smaller balances are especially prone to staying in cash for years following a rollover, and direct contribution cash is even stickier than rollover cash. So that means that when people open their IRAs, they are typically not making the investment. And just looking at the chart, for the age group 20 to 29, it's well over 50% are still in cash after 7 years. And I've also seen this when I've talked to people about opening up an IRA at, let's say, a custodian like Vanguard, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, what have you, they think that opening up the IRA is all they need to do. Open up the IRA and put the money in there and it's done. No, that's not the complete process. You need to also tell them once the money comes in from, let's say, your checking account, what to do with it. There's a next step where you need to actually, once the money shows up in the IRA, when you've, let's say, electronically transferred it from your checking account, you need to tell them that I want this cash invested into whatever investment choice that you would like. A lot of people think the IRA is the final step. Think of an IRA as like a cabinet, and the cabinet is just an empty box. And then once you put, let's say, money in the cabinet, it's in a jar, right? And then you have to decide, well, what's going to go in that jar and how much money am I going to put in there? And then how do I want to allocate the money that's in that jar? So the IRA itself is really just the vessel. And then the money that goes in there goes in initially as cash. And then you need to tell the custodian how to invest it. So there are a number of steps. It's not just opening up the IRA and funding it. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It was eye-opening to me. So here's the thing. So here we have a market decline that if you open up the newspaper, it'll be very sensational. Oh my God, the market's down, blah, blah, blah. Well, this is a great time to look and see if, did you roll over a 401k into an IRA, for example? Is it sitting there in cash? Well, the market is now back down to where it was in May approximately. It's down, I don't know, what is it, like almost 10% or something, or close to that? Well, this is a great time to say, oh, well, if my IRA is sitting in cash, maybe I should go ahead and change that investment election to something other than cash. So make this a goal of yours to go see if you have any money sitting in a rollover IRA that is not invested. Now, the next thing I wanted to get to, we're only little over 15 minutes into this so far. So we have another article that I would like to talk about. So the last one we just talked about, I would consider that kind of like, if we talk about it in terms of ski terminology, that was a green run. Well, we're turning a little bit and we're going to potentially go down a black run, or at least a double blue. Something that has come out, well, the guidance was issued, I think it was at the end of 99. This was the Secure Act and then followed by Secure 2. And basically, one of the key items in the Secure Act was, it used to be that if you inherited an IRA from somebody, you could stretch out the distributions from that IRA based on your life expectancy. So you would have a required minimum distribution based on an actuarial table that was based on your age. And the younger you are, the less you had to take out each year. And you could basically do that for the rest of your life. Well, the government needs some tax money. So one of the ways to kind of balance things out with their tax proposals was to say, okay, no more of that. That will only still exist for certain people, but most people will need to deplete that inherited IRA within 10 years. So all of the financial planners looked at it and said, oh, okay. So basically, the rule, as most people read it, because Congress kind of rushed to put this out, was any inherited IRA that you received January 1st, 2020 or later was subject to this new 10-year rule. Now, it applies to what they call, and there's a whole bunch of terminology that's very confusing. I'm going to link to an article that's on the Kitsis.com site, and it's called Untangling the IRS's New Finalized and Proposed Regulations on RMDs, that's Required Minimum Distributions, the 10-year rule, trust beneficiaries, spousal beneficiaries, annuities, and more. And I will link to that. Kitsis, in my opinion, the Kitsis site is one of the best sites for getting the correct information about things like this. There are now different beneficiary types for inheriting an IRA. There are designated beneficiaries and non-designated beneficiaries. So a non-designated beneficiary would be things like a charity, an estate, certain kind of non-see-through trust, basically a non-human. Think non-designated beneficiary means non-human. And that's one type of beneficiary. The other type of beneficiary is what's called a designated beneficiary. So think of human beneficiary. But there's two types of those. There's, and here's where the word soup gets even deeper, eligible designated beneficiaries and non-eligible designated beneficiaries. So eligible humans and non-eligible humans. Think of it that way. So let's go to the eligible designated beneficiaries. Those would be surviving spouses, so they can still do what's called the old rule, which is stretch the IRA. In fact, surviving spouses can actually just put it into their own IRA and act as if it was theirs to begin with. Disabled persons, chronically ill persons, and this is IRS terminology, persons less than 10 years younger than the decedent, and I'm going to come back to that one, minor children, and some see-through trusts benefiting the persons listed above. So basically what that means is those eligible designated beneficiaries or eligible humans can stretch. In other words, they can take distributions out for the rest of their life. In most cases, not minor children. I can get into that a little bit, but basically minor children can stretch while they're minors, but then once they stop being a minor, then they have to go to that 10-year rule. It's kind of confusing, but that's what it is. The key one here is really persons less than 10 years younger than the decedent. So if, for instance, you left your IRA to your brother and they were less than 10 years younger than you or potentially older than you, or you left it to a parent and they are older than you, they can take out their required minimum distributions over their lifetime using those lifetime tables. Most inheritors of an IRA fall into the other category, the non-eligible designated beneficiary, which is non-eligible human beneficiaries. And those are most non-spouse beneficiaries. If you don't meet one of the requirements of being an eligible designated beneficiary, then you are a non-eligible designated beneficiary. And that's what most people are. They're usually more than 10 years younger than the person they inherited from, because often IRAs are passed from parents to children, for example. And if they're not a spouse or disabled or a minor or chronically ill, then they're non-eligible. So basically, they're subject to this new 10-year rule. So what does that mean? And why do I bring this up? Well, there was a lot of confusion about, okay, so you're a non-eligible designated beneficiary. Well, I have 10 years. I can just basically do whatever I want as long as I empty it by year 10. Well, then the IRS came out with a clarification, and this is what this final clarification is all about. And I'm actually attending a seminar tomorrow with the Kitsis Group for continuing education for the CFP program that's going to talk about this in more detail. But basically what happened was people, or let's say financial planners, CPAs, and so forth, assumed, well, you just don't have to take any distributions. You can take them whenever you want. The account just has to be emptied by the 10th year. Well, then the IRS came out and said, whoa, hold on a second. If the person who passed away had already been taking required minimum distributions, or they had died, quote, after their required beginning date, which is the date upon which they need to start taking required minimum distributions, they may not have actually taken one yet because they had just passed that date, for example. But the IRS basically said there's this rule that the funds need to come out at least as rapidly as, or ALAR, as the decedent would have had to withdraw money from that account. So in other words, the non-eligible designated beneficiary, so non-spouse and probably more than 10 years younger, not disabled, not chronically ill, not a minor child, if the decedent was subject to required minimum distributions, then the beneficiary also needs to take those required minimum distributions as if they were that decedent. And I do want to get some clarification on that because there was some confusion as to whether it is based on the life expectancy of the beneficiary or the life expectancy of the decedent, which in many cases would require higher required minimum distributions than what would be based on the age of the beneficiary. If they're truly holding to the at least as rapidly, then they are going to need to take them out usually based on the decedent's age and not the beneficiary age, because in most cases, the beneficiary would be younger. And so what happened was, because it was so confusing, the IRS came out with some rules that basically said, okay, we realize you probably didn't do this in 2020 and 2021 and 2022. Technically, you were required to make those distributions, but we're not going to penalize you if you didn't do it. So basically saying, yes, technically you were supposed to do it, but there's no penalties, so effectively you didn't have to do it. And then they also said the next year, well, that's the same case for 2023 because it's still very unclear. And then they recently came out and said, and again, it's the same case for 2024. So you still don't have to do it. Now, but if you inherited an IRA in 2020, you need to have it depleted by the end of 2030 and or really 2029, because that's 10 years. And you're getting close to the end here. We're going to be in 2025 next year. So most people probably want to be taking money out across the 10 years for tax purposes instead of waiting to the 10th year and paying tax on a distribution for traditional IRAs. You do have to deplete a Roth IRA also with it. It still applies, but there's no tax. So you could wait till the 10th year and it's not going to have a tax impact, for example. But what they're saying now is with this new clarification, they're saying, okay, the rule is you need to take these required minimum distributions out. We're still going to give you a pass for 2024, but in 2025, you've got to do this. You don't have to go back and make distributions for prior years, but you do need to do it moving forward, starting in 2025, and the account still has to be depleted within 10 years. Now, if the decedent had not reached their required beginning date, in other words, were not required to make required minimum distributions, then there is no required minimum distribution for the beneficiary. They just have to deplete the account by the end of the 10th year. So that was a lot. That's how that works. Definitely, I'm going to call that a black diamond approaching double black. And I will put a link to the article in the show notes. There's a really nice flow chart. When I do the YouTube editing, I will try to put that flow chart up on the screen as we were talking here, because you can see how all this flows. And it will be a lot easier to see when you see this flow chart. And certainly if you're listening on a podcast, you can click through the link for the article and those flow charts are in that article. So I hope that was helpful. I know that sounds like a lot. It probably doesn't apply to many of you, but if you inherit an IRA, which, you know, there's a big wealth transfer that is probably going to happen as the baby boomers move assets to their probably children upon their death. We're going to see more and more of these inherited IRAs, and they are going to be subject to these crazy rules out there. And I wish they would have made it a lot easier and just said, hey, you know what? And I get their point, because the idea is that an IRA, individual retirement account, is for the retirement of the individual. You want them to be able to use that money for their lifetime. However, the government doesn't want it to just accumulate in there and they never get their taxes, or it takes forever to get their tax piece. So there's this required minimum distribution amount that basically says you need to take out at least some of the money every year after your required beginning date, which for most people is age 73 and will be 75 for anyone born after 1960. And they basically say, hey, once you reach 73 or 75, you got to start taking some of this money out. We're going to get our taxes. But when it's passed on to a beneficiary after your death, I kind of get why they're saying, hey, this was for the retirement of the decedent, not really for your retirement. So having this requirement that it's depleted within 10 years, I get it. But they didn't have to make it as convoluted. They could have just said, hey, you know what? You got to keep up with the required minimum distributions of the decedent, and it needs to be empty after the 10th year. And it just applies to everybody, maybe except spouses, because if you think about it, spouses are often saving in retirement accounts. And although they are individual and each individual has their own retirement account, in many cases, you're looking at it as collectively as a couple. So I get the idea that basically one spouse passes away, the other spouse can combine it with their own IRA and call it as their own. So maybe keep that rule and then just say, all right, everybody else, subject to the 10-year rule, if the person is taking required minimum distributions, you got to do it in years 1 through 9, and the account has to be empty by year 10. Done. End of story. We're finished. Instead of all these convoluted eligible, non-human, and all this stuff, it's crazy. So it's very confusing. Probably keeps a lot of accountants and financial planners employed as a result, but they could have made it a lot easier. And I wish they would clean this up, and they probably won't because they tend not to do that. Anyway, so that's the scoop. Short show, 30 minutes, trying to keep to that. Got a lot of packing to do. We'll see what my background looks like next time. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be here for a little longer because my closing date isn't until the end of September. And again, I really enjoy doing those monthly mailbags. So if you have a question, please send it to me, mark@marksmoneymind.com. And I will accumulate those questions and we will try to do those at least once a month. As long as I get those questions, I'll do it. Enjoy the summer and I will see you next week. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name, or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous, and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next week on the Mark's Money Mind show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. And now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.